truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth.
All rights reserved and affirmed.
Clear all minds. These are weapons of mass descent.
These are weapons of mass descent.
Welcome to Uprising, a daily digest of independent news analysis, investigation, education, artistic expression, and activism. It's Wednesday, February 6, 2008, and I'm your host, Sonali Gohankar.
It just makes me stop and think.
Silence is not an option.
Broadcasting live from the campus of Cal State Fullerton, we'll discuss the emerging results of yesterday's primary elections in the final part of our college campus broadcast.
Sorry if my eyes drop when the battle of meadows out, but I can't help myself, why should I?
This is Uprising. Good morning and welcome to Uprising. We're broadcasting live from the Titan Student Union at Cal State Fullerton as we take a look at yesterday's primary elections in about two dozen states across the nation. John McCain claimed a victory over his Republican rivals for the GOP nomination, but Mitt Romney and Mike Huckabee vowed to fight on. Meanwhile, no clear winner has emerged among the two Democrats. Hillary Clinton won in eight states, including in big delegate-rich states like California and New York, while Barack Obama won 13 states. By early this morning, Clinton had 845 delegates and Obama 765, according to the Washington Post, well short of the 2,025 needed to win the nomination. Independent voters in California who were able to vote in the Democratic primary for the first time this year experienced glitches obtaining ballots. Secretary of State Deborah Bowen issued a statement hours before the polls closed, reminding workers of the rules allowing independents to vote in the primary. The presidential races head to Louisiana and Washington over the weekend, leading into key primaries in Virginia, Maryland, and the District of Columbia next Tuesday. Meanwhile, Ralph Nader won the Green Party primary, with Cynthia McKinney coming in second. In California, voters also decided on several statewide ballot measures as of this morning. Propositions 94 through 97 on the Indian gaming compacts were expected to win. Proposition 92, the Community College Funding Initiative, appeared to be defeated, while the vote on Proposition 93 on legislators' term limits also appears to be heading for a defeat. My guests this morning are Norman Solomon. He is the founder and executive director of the Institute for Public Accuracy, author of several books, including War Made Easy, How Presidents and Pundits Keep Spinning Us to Death, and his latest, Made Love, Got War, Close Encounters with America's Warfare State. Norman joins us for our third day broadcasting from college campuses. He's been flown in especially to join us for these special Uprising broadcasts. Welcome back, Norman.
Thank you, Sonali.
And also here on the campus of Cal State Fullerton with us is Nancy Snow. She's a senior research fellow at the USC Center on Public Diplomacy, adjunct professor at the USC Annenberg School for Communication, and associate professor in the College of Communications right here at Cal State Fullerton. She's written several books, including The Arrogance of American Power, What U.S. Leaders Are Doing Wrong, and Why It's Our Duty to Dissent. Welcome, Nancy.
Thank you, Sonali. Great to be here.
And also with us, our third guest, Nativo Lopez, president of the Mexican-American Political Association. He's also the executive director of Hermandad Mexicana Latinoamericana, and he is, of course, a very well-known and prominent activist here in Southern California. Welcome to Uprising, Nativo.
Thank you for having me, Sonali.
So let's first get the reactions from our guests. The results, what you can call results, were essentially not terribly surprising. We predicted going into yesterday that probably there would be no clear winner emerging among Democrats. Probably John McCain would be leading the Republicans. That's exactly what happened. Norman Solomon, we've asked you the last couple of days to start us out with what your take on the media spin has been leading into each of these various days. So yesterday, Super Tuesday, how is the media spinning the race?
Well, I think it's well understood at this point this morning that John McCain has it in terms of being the Republican nominee. There's a predilection that news outlets have had for many months where when there's a contest, it's often referred to with words like a muddle. You know, journalists, or at least proto-journalists, like to have clarity, which to them means just somebody who's winning a nomination, which is a far cry from political clarity. On the Democratic Party side, I was just thinking that, you know, for at least 40 years now, there's been just an absence of conflict beginning in 1972 by the time the party has gone to the National Convention. And maybe for the first time now since 1968, there will be, albeit with much less bitterness, a real conflict over at least some sort of substance about candidates, maybe about the identity of the nominee itself, but certainly some significant difference in point of view, I think particularly in terms of Iraq. And the polling data, the exit polls that have been released in the last 12 hours or so by CNN, really indicate that if there's one issue that Barack Obama voters felt was particularly important to them, it was Iraq and the difference in the positions between Obama and Hillary Clinton.
I want to turn to Nancy Snow. Hillary Clinton won the state of California despite the huge surge in supporters of Obama, particularly among young voters. What do you think that indicates about California and also about the likelihood, you think, of Hillary winning the nomination?
You know, I think it's still too early to say that Hillary Clinton has this wrapped up in terms of the early psychological warfare and the perception nationally. It looked like she'd had a good night. But remember, had she lost California, that would have been a national embarrassment for her. I think the Obama campaign is very flush with cash. They're going to ride this through. And it could lead to an interesting battle right through the end of April, early May. I think there's something else going on here, too. This is a very unscientific analysis, but in terms of the excitement and a sense of empowerment, I'm seeing that much more amongst young people voting for Obama. And while the numbers there weren't quite as high as we expected amongst the youth vote, I do think that should she turn out to be the nominee and take on McCain, it could be interesting how many people might stay home. Remember, Senator McCain, Senator Clinton are still very polarizing figures, and I think Obama represents something powerful symbolically. The woman who won the day in terms of the quote that I responded to was Maria Shriver, saying that if Obama were a state, he'd be California. He'd be, you know, diverse, open, smart, bucks tradition, innovative, inspiring, dreamer, and leader. That's a lot to live up to. But that's not being said about Hillary Clinton.
That's interesting, given the, you know, what you said about the fact that these are polarizing figures. I want to try to spend the hour or much of it talking about looking to the future in November, particularly with McCain, since that is a clear result we can discuss. But let's turn to Nativa Lopez. Your organization, the Mexican American Political Association, has come out quite favorable with respect to Barack Obama. Si se puede with Obama was one commentary that you put out, Nativo. Why do you support Barack Obama?
The war is uppermost in our minds, you know, both the war and the immigration issue. But most importantly, he does not represent what we consider to be the most conservative institutional forces of the Democratic Party, which Hillary Clinton does represent. He's not the establishment candidate. He's from quote-unquote, the outside. He does represent an opening, a progressive opening, if you will, inside the Democratic Party, particularly with regard to the war, particularly with regard to immigration, and the ability to bring together sectors of the electorate that are not considered traditional electorate constituencies of the Democratic Party, the trade unions, the traditional women's movement, even the traditional civil rights movement. We see a split of African American leadership, for example, the congressional delegation splitting between the two candidates. We also see that with the Hispanic congressional delegation, more splitting for Clinton than for Obama. So he represents the new, he represents the forward. I don't want to say completely forward-thinking, progressive. I still think he's not left enough for my taste. But when Kucinich bowed out of the race and we saw enormous enthusiasm, white young voters rallying to Obama, an upswing of turnout of African Americans, that was indicating to us there was something new, a current happening that that we had to swim within that current. And continue to to push progressive politics within the framework of his candidacy.
Now, Nativo, the polls, you know, these are, of course, very broad brush strokes when you look at who are, what's the demographic that supports which candidate, and very inaccurate, but certainly perhaps representative of majorities. It seems as though African Americans, of course, are voting more for Obama than for Hillary Clinton, but Latinos voting more for Hillary Clinton than Obama.
Absolutely.
And Hillary Clinton's position on immigration, at least, does not seem to be necessarily as progressive as Obama's, if you can really call Obama's position even that progressive. Why are Latinos, you think, supporting Hillary?
Yeah, I have a couple of good explanations for our observations. I know someone will challenge me, and that's fine. Number one, hard to compete with 15 years campaigning as Hillary has, particularly in California, with 6 months or a year at most. For Obama in California, developing a constituency amongst the Latino electorate. Secondly, again, the traditional political elected officials of the Latino community are part of that traditional Democratic Party constituency. They're aligned with the previous Clinton administration. They were, for the most part, aligned with Hillary Clinton's candidacy, with the exception of the last 6 months. Then we saw a peeling away of some of the more progressive, Latino elected officials now calling out for the Latino electorate to come on board with the Obama candidacy. And third, and this is interesting because it's not characteristic of other segments of the electorate, the Latino electorate is a relatively new electorate, particularly from 1986 forward. You see the new, what we call the citizen immigrant or the immigrant citizen, who is first time participating or second time participating in presidential campaign or election voting. So there, and no disparaging characterization intended, but this is a relatively new, less sophisticated voting segment of the electorate than other segments of the electorate. So, and thirdly, because the Latino elected officials are so tied to that traditional Democratic Party wing in the Clintons, they're not being completely honest with the voting electorate in terms of the positions of Bill Clinton. You just think of NAFTA.
Right.
You just think of a series of immigration bills that he passed. You think of the border wall that began under the Clinton administration. So our Latino elected officials are not completely being forthright with their own electorate about the record of Bill Clinton and Hillary Clinton, for that matter, because she supported those policies.
Right, and L.A. Mayor Antonio Villaraigosa, of course, backing Clinton openly. I want to turn next to Norman Solomon and also remind our listeners we're broadcasting live from the campus of Cal State Fullerton here at the Titan Student Union, and we'll be hoping to take some questions from the floor later in the hour. Norman, your thoughts on what you've been hearing so far?
Yeah, I think these are some really key points. The Democratic Party hierarchy has for a long time been appreciably to the right of its base. On many issues, you could even argue that the top leadership, and I put that term sometimes in quotes, of the Democratic Party, whether in Congress or just the National Party, have been appreciably to the right of the entire population as a whole. When you look at survey data around economic justice, even about what should be done now in terms of Iraq. And I think Nativo had it quite right when he described Hillary Clinton in this context of this year, given that the very far right of the Democratic Party has kind of given up the ghost, witness Joe Lieberman and where he is these days. But still, the rest of that, what he has just referred to as the most conservative institutional force of the Democratic Party, they have largely, with some exceptions, been coalescing in the last couple of years around the candidacy of Hillary Clinton. But what's happened, I believe, now in the last night's results really reflect that, is that the Obama campaign has taken the lid off that contradiction. And while Obama himself and his positions leave an enormous amount to be desired and left unfulfilled in terms of foreign policy and economic justice, what has been set in motion is beyond his control. And I believe, to his credit, he understands that fully, that the base is activated, and where it can go, and I think the comparison is quite right, is in 1932, where Roosevelt was not such a progressive figure himself, but through his language and the ambience of his campaign and his base, it was possible for his presidency to be part of moving the country in a much more progressive direction.
I want to bring up the issue looking towards November of John McCain, who's the likely Republican candidate that will be facing off either with Hillary Clinton or Barack Obama. Some polls have shown, and we discussed this yesterday a little bit, that John McCain could beat either Hillary Clinton or Barack Obama. But McCain is somebody that the Republican Party isn't quite united around. He is a polarizing figure, but that may perhaps even be a strength of his, drawing independents even, or more conservative Democrats. Nancy Snow, what do you think is going to happen this year in terms of what progressives need to do? Because a lot of times progressives react by saying, well, we need to get behind our Democrat then, regardless of what their policies are, just to make sure we don't get a Republican in the White House.
I think if it were Obama as the nominee taking on McCain, Obama would win. And I say that because I think he's going to draw more on the independent strength. The Republicans, the conservative Republicans, if you monitor right-wing talk radio, are just on a rampage against McCain. And even Ann Coulter has said she's going to go out and campaign for Hillary Clinton should McCain get the nomination.
A kiss of death, maybe, but we'll see.
So what did that say about Hillary? I mean,
you're right, exactly. But look at what Obama did in the South. It was amazing. Early
right.
on, hearing about Georgia, the state where I was born, and I was just amazed to see him picking up white male voters. And I thought, there's something happening here. Alabama, he did very well as a national candidate. I think, too, you're going to see a very stark contrast, should it be Obama versus McCain. And I say this as one who's had some affection for McCain in the past as a maverick, that there will be a contrast in terms of the generational divide, and notwithstanding McCain's 95-year-old mother, who's quite a pistol herself. But it just will be such a sense of forward-looking versus the past, and war hero, but remember where he stood, McCain stood on the war in Iraq. And I just think for a lot of the conservative Republicans, it's likely that they would either stay home or just battle so much against him that I really see Obama winning that. Now, Hillary Clinton versus McCain, I could see that as really more of a dead heat. But I think, with Obama, he's got the money and he's got momentum. And Hillary Clinton, again, I think dodged a bullet last night. It'll be in terms of having Norman Solomon here, who talks so much about how we're spun from the right and the left. If you go online and you read the articles and so much of the new media, there's this instant response from people weighing in and blogging. The excitement is around Obama, but the Hillary camp is saying, look, we did very well. We're gonna pull this out in the end. But I really see that there's kind of a worry there, almost, that she didn't wrap this up earlier. I don't think she expected quite this challenge and competition from someone who, Nativo says, didn't have the name recognition.
Right.
I mean, Hillary Clinton has certainly had that in the Latino community for quite some time.
I want to pick up on something you said, Nancy, and ask Nativo to respond to that, because of what you've said, Nativo, regarding your support for Barack Obama, and which is, and this is something Norman said yesterday, which is the issue of Barack Obama getting this mainstream support, perhaps precisely because he's not making race an issue or gender an issue. Certainly Hillary Clinton is neither. And how do you feel about that? The fact that, I mean, certainly one needs mainstream America's support in order to win a presidential election. You cannot win a presidential election by just getting the support of one minority group or two minority groups. But by not making race and gender an issue, is he betraying the principles that you support?
I also wanted to address the issue of McCain and the Latino
Absolutely.
Electorate, which I think we're going to find very interesting. But he does make race an issue, but in a different way, going beyond race. In other words, his presence in and of itself, physically, is race. But his message goes beyond race. And because his message goes beyond race, it's addressing the race issue differently. And I believe what I perceive today that I didn't 6 months ago in terms of how whites are vote. How can you explain Iowa, New Hampshire, this man receiving the support of white voters to the degree that he did, and Latinos and
but maybe that's because he's not talking about the prison industrial complex. Maybe that's because he's not talking about the institutional racism and economic injustice facing people of color.
You know, is it beyond us that a candidate, because he is a candidate of color, needs to make that the first issue, the predominant issue? I don't think that's necessarily the case. And I think that's what he's teaching us. And I think that the turnout of the electorate is also teaching us that growing segments of the electorate want to see beyond race, even though implicitly they know that the issue must be addressed. And he does address it from the perspective of laying out what his economic vision of reform for the country is relative to health care, although I don't completely agree with his position about not excluding the private insurance companies, etc. But I think he's dealing with the issue of race differently than how we who have been political activists for many years have traditionally dealt with the issue, and perhaps assume that it always has to be in your face way of dealing with it. But I wanted to get to the issue of McCain, and shame on me for making predictions. I predicted that Obama would win in California, and I'm still convinced that he would have had something not occurred. And essentially, he was aced by Ace Smith, who is Hillary's political consultant here in California, that did a bang up job in vote by mail strategy that he has traditionally used in other campaigns. He was also the political consultant for Mayor Antonio Villaraigosa, and she banked literally tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, of votes prior to February 5th. Whereas he did not. He did not have an absentee ballot program whatsoever. He had a sparse ground campaign. So I'm convinced, had he done so, because he really started building the momentum in the last few days, and it just wasn't enough to take him over the top. And I predicted that he would be competitive with her amongst Latinos. He still hadn't come to California enough to make that case with Latinos, and that independents would push him over the top.
But
I haven't
seen
the numbers yet on the independents.
It's possible that the independent voters may not have had their votes counted properly, given that the Secretary of State had to remind poll workers yesterday that independents can vote in the Democratic primary.
Imagine that. But back to McCain. So another prediction, and on this one I don't think I'm going to be wrong. If McCain, and it looks like he'll be the nominee, relative to Latinos, we've all heard the statistics, for example, that George W. in 2000 secured something like 37% of the Latino vote, presenting himself as the compassionate conservative, coming out of Texas, where he had developed a generally good rapport with the Latino electorate in Texas. This guy has, McCain, has worked that image of being a moderate for much longer in a much more institutional way. But when you analyze his voting record, particularly in relationship to the war, I think that that's going to hurt him amongst different segments of the population. But amongst Latinos, I think he's going to do even better than George W. His name has actually been mentioned literally tens of thousands of times in Spanish language media, connected to Senator Kennedy relative to immigration reform over the last 8 to 10 years. There's no way you can get around it. Folks that I talk to all over the place, yes, he's a Republican, but he's been for immigration reform, you know, all these years. And talk about name ID. He has name ID amongst Latinos who have been looking at this question, struggling and frustrated with this question for so many years. I absolutely think his moderate presentation, different from substantive policy positions on McCain, but his moderate presentation and the question of immigration reform is going to make inroads in the Latino electorate, and that's going to hurt Obama if he's a nominee.
I want to remind our listeners that we are speaking with Nativo Lopez, president of the Mexican American Political Association, executive director of Hermandad Mexicana Latinoamericana. He is joining us along with Nancy Snow, who is the author of several books, including The Arrogance of American Power. She's also an associate professor at the College of Communications here at Cal State Fullerton, where we're broadcasting live from, and our guest, Norman Solomon, who has been our guest expert these last 3 days, founder and executive director of the Institute for Public Accuracy. We're going to take a short break to hear this radical day in history, and when we come back, we'll continue our conversation. We'll also be preparing to hear from folks in the audience that are joining us live. Stay tuned.
People, the time.
This is your Radio Roots reporter, Hannah George. On this day, February 6th, the Seattle General Strike of 1919 began. The shipyard workers' strike expanded into the general strike of about 65,000 individuals from several supporting unions. This strike was sparked after the workers' union mistakenly received a telegram revealing that the U.S. government played a role in the refusal to increase their wages. The radicalized workers in Seattle, Washington, took over the city for a week, closing down Seattle's capitalist industries. They even set up an alternative to the police force, which was unarmed and forbade the use of... And get this, the crime rate went way down. Yeah, I said it. This is your free speech educator, reminding you, never let the past slip away.
If you believe in democracy, if you believe in free speech and independent media...
Say it loud!
Support KPFK.
Hello, I'm Don Bastani, host of Middle East in Focus. On his trip to the Middle East a few weeks ago, President Bush criticized Iran for its nuclear program, as though he's preparing the people in that part of the world for a U.S. attack on Iran. Commentator Tad Daly will analyze it for us. And Jewish-American Fulbright scholar Anna Baltzer will tell us what she saw in the Israeli-occupied West Bank. Middle East in Focus tonight at 8 o'clock.
And welcome back to Uprising. We're broadcasting live from the campus of Cal State Fullerton, and we have been on college campuses throughout this week. Tomorrow we'll go back to our regular programming, and my guests on campus here are Norman Solomon, Nancy Snow, and Nativo Lopez. I want to turn back to Norman Solomon and talk a little bit about the circumstances of this primary election and how they may have led to the things turning out the way they did. People are quite focused on the economy these days for obvious reasons. Hillary Clinton seems to have benefited from that turn in the news cycle, whereas perhaps if the Iraq war issue had been more high profile, Barack Obama might have done slightly better. Do you think that's an accurate assessment?
Well, it's certainly a big factor, the way that the news media claim to be reporting but actually are affecting how much people see Iraq as dominating the news. We've been hearing for many months that violence has decreased in Iraq, and according to the U.S. news media working de facto definition, when the U.S. military drops 2,000-pound bombs on urban areas, that's not violence because Uncle Sam is doing it, no matter how many people are being killed and injured in the process. The split, and there is a significant one, unfortunately not a bigger one, between Obama and Hillary Clinton on the question of Iraq, past, present, and future, is something that Obama has sharpened in recent days. He's gotten into a new refrain. We heard it last night. We heard it in the last couple of days, where he says if he's in the general election debate with McCain, then he is going to be able to say that he challenged the war early on. And McCain will not be able to say, well, look, you're complaining about a war that you supported when it got going. And I think that's an underlying question and, in a sense, a fault line through the Democratic Party. And it could be a constructive one because it could lead us to a sort of dialectical debate that could move the party into not only in terms of platform a stronger anti-war position than we might expect, but also a candidate, hopefully, in from the standpoint of anti-war activists in this context, I think, Barack Obama, taking a more clear anti-war stand. McCain, on the other hand, is somebody who has benefited enormously for actually a couple of decades now from news media mythology about being a maverick, being independent. That is compared to what? It's compared to the likes of Ann Coulter and Rush Limbaugh, which tells us very little. I mean, he may be relatively independent and non-doctrinaire compared to them, but I think, you know, Mortimer Snerd or Arock would be, not Erock, but A-R-O-C-K would be, relatively speaking, independent when you compare it to the orthodoxy and the orthodox so-called leaders of the Republican Party. One other point on that, and it goes to media myth. We hear so much about how John McCain was a heroic figure from the Vietnam War. And almost never in the news media, and I had an op-ed piece about this many years ago in the LA Times, almost never did the news media mention what John McCain was doing when he was shot down over North Vietnam. He was participating in a war on Vietnam that killed at least 2 million people. And it was a war totally based on lies, one which was engaged in wholesale slaughter of civilians. So the whole media idea that John McCain is some sort of hero begs the question of his support for that war, his support for this war, and I would dare say support for wars in the future.
Nancy Snow, your thoughts on the same and what you think about the fact that, and we discussed this a little bit earlier, John McCain and the Republican Party machinery behind him. At some level, he is emerging as a main, as the nominee, but you've had Mike Huckabee, you've had Mitt Romney winning whole states, something that we haven't seen candidates in the Democratic Party representing the more left aspect of the Democratic Party being able to do. Do you think that the, maybe if you can call this the diversity of Republican candidates, is a strength of the Republican Party this election, or is it actually going to end up being a weakness?
Well, I think, again, McCain has this pretty much wrapped up.
So it's a moot point.
Right. And I also think that Huckabee is an interesting fellow. He's got more of a populist message. He's very likable. He's a great speaker. He got the evangelical vote in the South, and there could be something going on in back rooms between McCain and Huckabee. That's sort of what Romney is insinuating. So
you mean a McCain-Huckabee ticket?
Yeah, and that would be, I think, very strong. I do want to say regarding McCain that I didn't work with him directly, but when I lived in New Hampshire, besides being a political science professor, I headed up Common Cause of New Hampshire, and we were, as a nonpartisan citizens lobby, working on the McCain-Feingold bill, and he was very instrumental in getting that passed. It's a very flawed bill. The conservative Republicans didn't like it, and they criticized him at length about it, but the idea was to try to control some of this money influencing all of the politics. It wasn't public financing, but it was a reform bill. And again, the Republican stalwarts didn't like that. He's also, I think, McCain has been certainly strong on global warming in terms of the rhetoric and just putting that whole debate to rest. And also regarding what Norman said about, you know, the war hero image, I don't think that's going to go away. I think we're still sort of haunted a lot by Vietnam, and we're still living in a time post 9/11 where Americans want to feel as if we can remain number one. And it'll be interesting to see if Obama, as a transcendent person of color, in other words, he transcends color, how he could frame that in terms of being a new image for America and the world. And that was brought to my attention by a student who said, think about how that might go over if people are looking at the so-called leader of the free world as a biracial president who, you know, lived in Indonesia. He's quite global, and he really plays on being a global citizen and getting beyond this American superpower image that we have. So in terms of national security, could be very interesting debate between these two. Again, it's really, we're still living in a time where we struggle with this phraseology of, you know, this is the greatest country in the world that people kind of cringe to internationally. They don't like that hubris. And also one more thing about Huckabee. Remember, he wrote a piece, I believe, in Foreign Affairs where he challenged the Bush administration as being arrogant in terms of its foreign policy, and he got heavily criticized for that. And that caught my attention. I thought Huckabee is one to watch, and he seems to have something going on with McCain.
I want to open up the floor for questions. Before we do that, Nativo, a question for you regarding the work that you think needs to be done by social movements between now and November. Clearly, a lot of work has to be done, but also in terms of where you think this election it fits within people's organizing, because in previous election years, we found a lot of folks will abandon their organizing work in favor of focusing on the elections. And also, what you think about the Green Party's role in all of this?
Yes, I wanted to mention also something about the discourse on immigration, immigrants, and immigrant policy, as that pertains particularly to the Republican candidates. It should be noted, and this is an interesting observation, that the most shrill and extremist proponents of anti-immigrant policies in the Republican lineup of candidates have fallen off the map. Duncan Hunter, Tom Tancredo, Giuliani, notwithstanding his progressive policies as a mayor of New York, came out vociferously in opposition to immigrants in this particular primary run-up, has fallen off. And of the remaining three, the most shrill of the three has been Romney, and he continues to trail the other two.
So what does this say about the state of the country? Are we moving in a better direction as a whole?
No, not necessarily. What it says is that these candidates wanted to use immigrant bashing as the premise of their candidacies, and they've utterly failed. Poll after poll has indicated that even amongst Republicans, 62% want some form of immigration reform. They're not the fringe, as perhaps many activists would say or think or present. And that extremist ring is really an extremist wing, and it's a minority even amongst the Republicans. And it should be noted in this particular election campaigns that the worst of the bunch have all fallen off. They didn't get the traction that they anticipated, and they're no longer standing in that lineup. But in relationship to what progressives should be doing, I just want to tell you, with regard to the Mexican-American Political Association, vis-a-vis the Obama campaign, how we sized it up. We don't embrace everything that he presents, and essentially what we view is that this is an opening. This is an opportunity. This is at the same time a moment in which we could pursue the realization of our own platform relative to immigration reform and into the war, single-payer health care access, and a series of other what we like to term our platform, and continue to build on that platform and push that platform on the candidate, on the campaign, on the candidacy, amongst the population, and continue to build constituency, build chapters, build membership within the context of an election campaign that has a progressive opening. Now, let's say that Obama is not the nominee and Clinton is the nominee. I will say, anticipating what our position would be, that there would probably be a search for another candidate and not line up behind a Clinton candidacy because of everything that she represents of a conservative nature within the Democratic Party. Our size up would basically be a Clinton presidency would be the equivalent of a McCain presidency. She really comes off in her policy and her positions as a moderate Republican, so there's not much difference in that regard. I don't see personally that we could pursue the posture relative to her candidacy as we could with a Obama candidacy.
Norman, you had one more comment?
Yeah, from a progressive standpoint, I mean, we're talking hypothetically, but if Hillary Clinton were the presidential nominee this year, I think such a position would be a mistake, Because when you look on paper at the political programs of Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama, you need a very fine tuning, usually, to see the difference. And frankly, sometimes on health care and certainly on subprime mortgages, Hillary Clinton is to the left of Barack Obama. And I say that as somebody who's very critical of Hillary Clinton. So if Hillary Clinton were nominated, the very same precept that it's about our movement organizing, I think, would call upon us to grit our teeth, to be always honest about what's wrong with her positions and her MO. But I think it would be a big mistake, similar to the Gore-Bush mistake of 2000 that some of us on the left made, to say, well, there's not a dime's worth of difference. All you got to say is Alito and Roberts, and we see that that's not the case, but on a whole host of issues. So, repetition compulsion would be a mistake for the left to walk away from a contest between what really is, in many ways, an extreme right, represented in that case by McCain, and at least, again, some capability for a movement to mobilize to pull a presidency in a progressive direction under a Democrat in the Oval Office.
So we've heard from our panel. I want to hear from our audience, and clearly there's a little bit of difference of opinion here, which is good, and we need to be starting this dialogue, certainly. I'm wondering if anybody from our audience here of students and faculty at Cal State Fullerton would like to join in the conversation, and if so, just raise your hand, and our producer will come and bring the microphone to you. Again, I want to remind our listeners we're speaking live from the campus of Cal State Fullerton. Good morning, welcome, and state your name and question or comment.
My name is Drew Biba. My comment was, I was one of those independent voters that had an issue at the polling place yesterday, and they were confused by the independent, didn't know which ballot to give me. But then the other issue was when they said, oh, you can vote Democratic, I'm voting in the same place where I've grown up my whole life, and they told me, how can you vote Democratic? How will your father feel? And I thought it was kind of wrong that somebody like working at a polling place that knows who you are and your family and everything are talking about that, and then obviously probably going to bring it up to my father later. And I think that drove some of the younger independent voters away from the Republican nominate or the ballot just because of that, because they might be 18 living at home and then going to have to go home and explain to their father why they voted for Barack Obama.
I think that sort of violates the very sacred notion of privacy of your votes. That's there might be cause for a complaint there at your local polling place. Do you want to tell us, I'm assuming you did vote for Barack Obama? Do you want to tell us why?
Actually, I didn't.
You don't have to tell us who you voted for.
I voted for Nader, but that's the other thing, is kind of disappointed that the third parties don't get mentioned very often.
Let's talk about that, actually. I'm glad you brought that up.
And we only hear about the Republicans and Democrats, and since they are relatively similar in a lot of ways, it's kind of hard when you don't hear about the third option.
In fact, Norman, I know you have a strong opinion about the Nader candidacy, what role he played in the, a couple of elections ago, but what role you think he might play this election, if any, because he is playing one already.
Well, in 2000, Ralph Nader got 2.7% of the general election ballots for president. I supported Ralph Nader in California in 2000. In 2004, his eventual vote total in the general election was about 0.5%. My feeling is that in 2004, given history and electoral reality, he was kind of like somebody standing on a bar of soap in a rainstorm. But he's committed to doing the same thing over and over again, and it's actually quite tragic, I think.
Well, is there anybody else in the audience that would like to speak up and tell us what you think regarding this election? If so, do raise your hands. We'll come to you. Nancy Nativo, did you want to jump in on the Nader issue?
Yeah, I did. Actually, I wanted to say the two-party system is definitely stacked against us. And when you travel internationally and you go to Europe and other places where you have a much more vibrancy and variety, we exalt diversity in this country, yet we have more versions of Ben and Jerry's ice cream than we do political parties. And I think that the young man here talking about, I feel like my vote gets wasted. There's no mention of these third-party candidates. It's just the system is extraordinarily interlocked in that there's a benefit there to the money-driving politics. But I do want to underscore what Norman said, though, about given a situation where Nader steps in, I'm reminded of the 92 election with Ross Perot and how that ultimately helped Clinton in the end. Otherwise, it would have been Bush being reelected, Bush Sr. But should you have a third-party candidate this time, that could then lead to a McCain presidency. So if you're really trying to keep movement politics going, yes, you might have to hold your nose and vote for that candidate you didn't want in the Democratic side. But you've got to think further down the road and keep the pressure up, I think, for opening up the dialogue in politics.
Let's take one more question from the audience.
Sure. My name is Alejandro Gradilla. I'm a faculty member in Chicano Studies here at Cal State Fullerton. I'm one of those 30-something-year-old voters that voted for Obama. My wife and I did. One of the things that I think is important, what I like about this campaign and Obama's strategy, is that this is the Howard Dean, a full 50-state approach to the Democratic Party. For the first time, my wife and I, we found ourselves caring about Idaho and Alaska and Montana and the Dakotas, where we normally would hope, hopefully New York gets it right, Illinois and California gets it right, enough to carry, you know, electoral votes. But this is the first time where I see a candidate actually running competitively in these non-diverse states and doing very well. In other words, the assumption is only on the coasts do progressives exist. And we're seeing that when people campaign to everyone, you find progressives, or you find people who didn't realize they were progressives. And I think that's the importance of the Obama campaign. And I think the other thing you're finding in the Democratic voters is that you're also finding those who are hesitant for this type of reality show coronation of Hillary Clinton. There is extreme hesitancy in terms of this is someone who kind of thought she had it, kind of, you know, bought the dress, the crown, everything, you know, a year in advance. And now people are just kind of like, well, wait a minute.
Right.
Wait a minute. Let's look a little closer.
Right. In fact, and I want to mention Alejandro Gradilla to thank you for helping us organize today's broadcast on the campus of Cal State Fullerton. And Nathifa, did you want to throw in your 2 cents on
to Norman? I'll take 10 cents instead of 2 cents. on the Nader question on the Green Party, a minority or minor parties. Generally, that is the conundrum of our system. And for us that want to think out of the box or think beyond the two major political parties, Tweedledee, Tweedledum, and the candidates that represent those two parties and therefore represent essentially two constrained options of seeing the world and seeing a system and seeing, you know, the problems both domestically and internationally, if we have a disparaging view about third candidates, then by extension we would have that same view about those parties. So why would I register as a Green if there is never an option or an opportunity to have a candidate that would be a contender in a lineup with all these candidates, and then you're forced into the conundrum of choosing the lesser of two evils, recognizing that you're still voting for evil. So while I concur with the percentages, et cetera, I don't concur with blaming Nader for a Democrat losing in 2004 or in 2000. Because if you look at the Republican strategy in 2004, what did Karl Rove do to bring 4 million new voters into the bank for the Republicans and reelect George W.? He went out, spent the money, beat the Bushes, mobilized evangelical voters, and brought 4 million new voters into that election. And here in California alone, for example, we're fighting with the Secretary of State, Bowen, because she has not released monies to allow broader voter registration of non-registered voters.
Right.
There's 2 million Latinos in Los Angeles County alone that could be brought into the electorate if systemically, resources were put in the hands of the voters themselves to facilitate participation in the political process and open it up. But our system truly is an archaic system.
We have time only for one more question before we end the program, and then we'll give our panelists some final say. Go ahead.
This comment / question might be a little off topic, but I think it's pertinent to discussing kind of the real problems that we're surrounded by every day and that really affect us. And I encourage everyone to look up in the skies every day and look at the artificial cloud streaks that are being sprayed across the skies, because there's no real answer to these by our political parties. And these have been proven to contain barium and heavy metals and all kinds of toxic things.
Okay,
this is still not being addressed any of our politicians, by any of our elected officials, within the local setting.
We only have about a minute left.
Just wanted to bring that out there.
We only have about a minute left. Norman Solomon, I want to thank you for being our guest expert these last 3 days and give you time to just make one final closing comment before you fly off to the Bay Area today.
Hey, my pleasure. Election results are always multifactorial, and there are conundrums here. I certainly agree. It's a challenge. And, progressives, and I think the last 7 years have taught and retaught us that, progressives have a responsibility to block the right wing, to not unwittingly facilitate their electoral triumphs. One comment I want to say real quickly about a 50-state strategy is, from a legislative and congressional standpoint, a 50-state strategy is imperative. From a presidential election standpoint, a 50-state strategy is a huge mistake. The mythology that a Democrat for president in the general election is going to carry the Deep South is a fantasy that depletes resources and drags programmatically the Democratic Party away from progressive positions. And I think it's very important for us not to be fooled. If Obama's getting majorities in Alabama, it doesn't mean that we should try to win the electoral votes in November from Alabama or Mississippi or those other states in the Deep South. It ain't going to happen.
Well, I want to thank the three of you very much for joining us today. Norman Solomon, founder and executive director of the Institute for Public Accuracy. Nancy Snow, she is an associate professor in the College of Communications here at Cal State Fullerton. Nativo Lopez, president of the Mexican American Political Association. And for Sonali, subversive thought for the day, I'd like to quote Franklin Delano Roosevelt, who once said, "An election cannot give a country a firm sense of direction if it has two or more national parties, which merely have different names but are as alike in their principles and aims as two peas in the same pod." That's Franklin Delano Roosevelt, and that's Sonali's subversive thought for the day. You've been listening to Uprising, live from the campus of Cal State Fullerton. Tomorrow we go back to the KPFK studios. Gabriel San Roman is our assistant producer. Today's on-site engineer was Zuberi Fields, and our engineer at KPFK is Teddy Robinson. Our standby producer is Ernesto Arce, and Gabriel San Roman is also today's audience coordinator. Listen to this show online at uprisingradio.org. Email us at mail@uprisingradio.org and order CDs of the show at pacificaradioarchives.org. I'm your host and producer, Sonali Kolhatkar. Thanks so much for listening.